The political world is becoming increasingly volatile and unpredictable, while at the same time having a profound impact on the lives of citizens across the globe. This is Polis Podcast, and I am Thomas Barton, the founder of Polis Analysis. Every week, I'll be in the virtual armchair with relevant experts from Polis teams to discuss the key developments shaping the political world. All we need is for you to join us on the virtual sofa. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's Polis Podcast episode. It's on a really fascinating topic. We're actually focusing on Latin America for the next 20 minutes or so. And I'm joined by Fergus, who is a Latin America researcher at Polis, and he's got a huge amount of interesting analysis to share with us. And we're going to be focusing a lot on the latest political developments in the Andean countries and seeing how they will have a wider impact on the region in Latin America, but also on countries across the globe. So Fergus, thanks so much for joining me. And if you could just, you know, kick off by providing a little bit of context to our listeners, you know, what's actually happening politically in the so-called Andean countries in Latin America. Maybe you can even start by telling people what the Andean countries are.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Well, firstly, thank you very much for having me on the show. So the Andean regions are, they consist of six countries stretching from Venezuela in the north to Chile in the south, including Colombia, Peru, Ecuador, and Bolivia. And firstly, 2021 has obviously been a year shrouded by the pandemic, and this area is probably one of the worst affected in the world. Peru has the highest death rate per capita of any country in the world, and the other nations have been equally hit. However, I'm going to be focusing on the political spectrum and how this might be changing. There have been, within 2 years, there will have been five elections in the Andean region. Obviously, only six countries, and Venezuela being the other is essentially at the moment a failed state with a dictator, Nicolas Maduro, in power. The progressive shift could spark a social change, but there's potentially economic disruption for foreign direct investment. Recently, just last week, Pedro Castillo, the leftist candidate for the Free Peru Party, was inaugurated in Lima, the capital of Peru, having won an election by just 44,000 votes over Keiko Fujimori, who is the daughter of ex-right-wing dictator Alberto Fujimori. And this has essentially brought about changes in immediate changes in Peru, and a crisis of confidence for investors and even the population in itself.
Sure, but that last point is fascinating, because there's been a break in legacy, I suppose, given the Fujimori candidate very, very narrowly lost. I mean, 44,000, that's razor sharp.
Exactly. And to be fair, this is something that's happened all over the region. Traditional parties have seen themselves losing to independent in regional elections, or new parties. So Free Peru is a new party. Morena, actually in Mexico, I know not in the Andes, but also a new party. Colombia has an election in 2022, and he's called Petro, the new kind of progressive opposition, at the head of a new party. In Chile, it's the same story, and obviously in Bolivia, Evo Morales' party, when it came to power in 2008, was also a new party. So this is a trend that has happened from north to south, excluding Ecuador, who has actually just elected a conservative. But it's definitely something to note, and something the international community will be interested to hear.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and it's a lot of our listeners are based in European countries where actually political parties remain the same for decades. And obviously there's been some change, like in France, for instance, but on the whole, that's quite unheard of. in a European context at least. But given if we use Peru as an example, there's been this sort of break in legacy that you've just mentioned. Will this actually translate into a real tangible change for citizens, like at that citizen level? What's actually going to happen, and what difference will it make to people's lives?
That is the huge question. And in Peru, his government that he's elected could suggest that perhaps maybe not, because he's Pedro Castillo has elected a kind of a wide range of different people. On one side is Guido Bellido, who is his new prime minister, who's supposedly a sympathizer of the Maoist group Shining Path, who were a group responsible for the deaths of 70,000 people across 2 decades towards the end of the 20th century. Whereas on the, and this is his new prime minister, although these are just, it must be noted, these are reports from certain people. There's nothing based on fact. We don't know if he really is a sympathizer of Shining Path. But then on the other hand, that you have people such as the World Bank economist Franca, who is his new finance minister. And this was an aim to basically ensure that investor confidence, and because Peru is an essential gold mine for, as the Andes in general is for natural resources. It's what it's known for. Lithium has been found. Bolivia is the largest lithium exporter in the world now, and has huge reserves underneath the Salar de Uyuni. Chile and is the largest copper producer. Peru is second. These two together export more copper than the next 16 exporters combined. Gold in Ecuador, huge logging, obviously because of the Amazon, and then oil even in protected areas that are being debated. So the Andes is huge. Huge for resources, and this is half of the issue, because these resources have essentially created an economy that is based on social inequality. Right. And according to the Gini coefficient, 5 of the 6 countries in the Andean region are in the top 25 most unequal in the world, the exclusion actually being the failed state of Venezuela. So there is huge, and interestingly, Pedro Castillo ran on a motto of no more poor people in a rich country.
Right.
And this is something that has been echoed by the Chilean former student leader Gabriel Boric, who said if Chile was the birthplace of neoliberalism, it will also be its grave. And so for those who don't know, neoliberalism is an economic policy that essentially attempts to eliminate state influence in the economy to enable free market and deregulation. But I mean, it created Chile's wealth. Chile is the richest country in Latin America per capita head, but it's also one of the most unequal. So it's this balance that is potentially about to change. But
sure, and that will have connotations for the wider for the global economy. I mean, especially given you touched on raw materials, and obviously that has a huge impact on the consumers of those raw materials, and a lot of them are quite modern, advanced economies. That's a really interesting point that you make. I mean, Chile, for instance, is home to Albemarle Corporation, which is a huge company in using lithium to create lithium batteries for electric vehicles. As we know, a lot of countries in Europe, for instance, particularly in the EU, are doing a huge amount to try and make their economies more sustainable, and that includes, you know, rolling out electric cars, so that's going to be, you know, massively influenced by those countries that export the materials required. Is your argument therefore that that actually, you know, these countries are sort of they're wealthy in terms of resource, and they're obviously big exporters. But do you think that actually the economic benefits of those exports will be felt by citizens in Andean countries, given the changing political nature of their governments? I mean, you just mentioned that some slogans there about ending poverty in rich countries, for instance. So is that what we can expect to happen?
The big issue is could just be kind of populist propaganda, an attempt to get into power. I mean, this has been seen before in Peru, 2010, an equally populist leader entered power on a very similar motto, and not much changed at all. And there's potential that this will be the case again. If you increase the royalties, if you want to increase the tax on mining companies, the other issue is will your foreign direct investment will it come, because the financial incentive might not be there?
Well, precisely. That's a good point. It's a good point, because actually, if we stick with the wider region, countries like Brazil, for instance, are really leading the way when it comes to the commodities boom. And there's a huge amount of demand from an international audience for raw materials coming out of Brazil. I mean, the agricultural sector is hugely expanding. I just wonder if EU markets, for instance, or, other big markets across the globe from, advanced economies, will be looking to Andean countries for materials when they could get them from Brazil, which might have a more competitive tax regime.
Yes, exactly. That's something that I'm sure these countries will be looking at. Brazil is leading the way, as you say. However, the big thing, I mean, going back to the lithium, is that a lot of these countries, they're very solely, they're heavily dependent on one resource, something that Brazil, for example, does not have, and in to be honest, most of the world doesn't really have lithium. And then so Chile, it's a lithium triangle, is Bolivia, Chile, and Argentina, in the north of Chile, in the north of Argentina, and the south of Bolivia. It's actually a very difficult region to get to. It's about 4,000 meters up in the air. The lithium is actually underneath the salt flats, which are incredibly thick. You can drive a car over them. Okay. So it takes a huge amount of investment as well. There's a German company, obviously Germany, huge in automobile industry, who wanted to achieve a deal with the at the time, the Evo Morales government in Bolivia, which completely fell through. And so now the new government in Bolivia is trying to appeal to the world, to the international market, for new investors in their lithium. But the question is, they are sitting on something the world needs, in essence, but it's how much they want from it, and how much they're willing to budge on what is already a very heavily taxed resource. Bolivia were leading the way in terms of, they were the first of these Andean regions to go towards a socialist model. They do actually implement quite high taxes on foreign investors and foreign companies in the country. And the big question there is, has it worked socially? Are they using their money to the benefit of society? And it, in certain cases, yes. In certain cases, no. There's heavy corruption trials at the moment going on, even of ex presidents, and whether these are actually just political moves or if they actually are corruption is another thing. And another country that has had a big problem with this is Colombia, and obviously it's social unrest has been seen around the world. Cali, which is the third largest city in the country, essentially was turned into war zones, and pretty upsetting scenes of police brutality as well. So there's this is something that's been exacerbated by COVID. I'm talking about like social inequality, but has been in these countries for a very, very long time. And it's there's hints that it's potentially just reaching a tipping point. And these candidates are either taking advantage of that for their own, like to get themselves into power, or genuinely wanting to do something about it. And we will, it's only a matter of time, but we will see.
Absolutely. And I mean, we'll have to stay close to developments in this region to actually see whether there'll be any tangible change for citizens. But if we think beyond, you know, the impact for citizens in the region, and actually beyond the impact of for consumers in other economies, like in Europe, for instance, I want to turn to another sort of key global dynamic here, which is, how the United States will respond to this political change. Because as we know, I mean, the US does consider the Latin America region to be in its sphere of influence, if I can use that sort of, probably prehistoric terminology. I mean, spheres of influence is what we used to talk about during the Cold War. But Latin America is certainly in the US's backyard when it comes to foreign policy. So how do you think the Biden administration will sort of respond to this potentially, you know, pretty significant political change across the Andean countries?
Interestingly, they use the election of Pedro Castillo, which was a very hard fought victory, only won by 44,000 votes over Keiko Fujimori, as an example. They termed it an example of democracy in the region, which is a very interesting thing, considering that this was probably a government that they potentially in the past might have labeled something very different. Peru and America and the US have very big trade deals. America is Peru's biggest exporter, especially of their copper. So this was a bit of probably gave the Castillo government quite a lot of confidence. And it's an interesting development. America has tried to limit its political involvement in the region due to its history, especially in the Andean region. And it has come up against Iván Duque, who's the president of Colombia, and the reports of police brutality very hard. It's really attempted to put some pressure on the Colombian government for their response, which has been seen all over the world on social media, and it gets every week there's a new pretty sobering report coming out of Colombia. And it's even led to, I mean, there was an attempt on his life, Iván Duque's life, about a month ago. And so the Americans have definitely put the pressure on Iván Duque, and are attempting to probably change their image in the Andean region.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's really interesting to note, because I mean, the US has got a history of intervening in that part of the world, so I'm sure that
definitely it's not long ago in Chile as well. I mean, even they're writing a new constitution at the moment, and this constitution dates back to Augusto Pinochet, who was the dictator in the 1990s that essentially was backed in a coup by the Americans. So they do have a lot of history. You're right.
Yeah, CIA coups is a whole other topic we could get into perhaps another time. But I mean, Fergus, just talking to you, it's really hammered home that the political developments happening in these Andean countries are of significance, well, of potential significance to the citizens living there, first of all.
Yeah.
Given the sort, I know at the moment you're saying that there's been a lot of sort of political slogans going around, dealing with social justice and so on, and we'll have to wait and see whether it leads to anything tangible. But it's clear developments also have an impact on the global economy as a whole, especially given this commodities component. You cited lithium as an example. So this is not a particularly nice question, because it's always hard when we talk about elections to really foresee things and to look into the crystal ball. But What I want to understand is, given how important these political developments are in the Andean countries, what can we actually expect to unfold next? I mean, what's your sort of take on what we can forecast?
Well, especially in Latin America, it's an incredibly volatile area, especially at the moment. What we can expect, Peru is seeming to be on a knife edge. It could turn either way. Castillo probably won't actually have that much power in his Congress. He actually doesn't have a majority at all. He wants to draft a new constitution. Whether that will happen it's very doubtful that it will. And it's also potential that he might even be impeached before that constitution gets to Congress. Although I don't think that will happen either. I think it's just limited power. In terms of the region as a whole, there's definitely a shift towards progressive, I put in quotation marks, towards these progressive governments. There's candidates in the Colombian election in 2022 and Iván Duque's popularity is completely plummeted, and these candidates lead in the polls. If we talked about Brazil earlier, Lula has just come out of jail, his jail term is overturned, and he will be in the election running against Bolsonaro in
January. It's worth mentioning for our listeners to remind them that he was once president in
Brazil. Exactly, and then got done for, well, supposedly for corruption in a big scandal. But he's back on the political table and looking very popular as well. In Chile, there's two more moderate candidates for their election later in the year. Gabriel Boric is one that he was the former student leader, and he's only 35 years old, and he's one of the favourites, and he was the one who I quoted earlier. He was stating about if it would be neoliberalism's grave in Chile, which is quite a big thing for Chile. Neoliberalism was Pinochet's and the Chicago Boys. It was their kind of brainchild, and sure, still hasn't been overturned after 30 years. So yeah, I'd say there's a definite shift. It doesn't mean that pink tide is returning to Latin America. Pink tide was a big kind of socialist movement throughout South America, where there became lots of different socialist governments. It doesn't mean that that's returning at all on any level. It's very difficult to tell if there's fear mongering. Pedro de Castillo has been likened to the likes of Fidel Castro and Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua, and they think that there are people saying that Peru will become the next Cuba or the next Nicaragua or Venezuela. I think it would be very difficult for him to even start down that road.
Sure.
And interestingly, we haven't really mentioned Ecuador very much, but Ecuador is the buck of the trend. It's going the other way. They have a very business-centered leader who is actually using this kind of political turmoil in his neighbors to focus heavily on his own. He's opened up the country to a lot of oil production potential in the Amazon, which is highly controversial in itself.
Well, it just goes to show you shouldn't sort of perceive regions in a homogenous way, and actually there are
especially not Latin America.
Yeah, so that's a good point. I mean, look, ultimately, I suppose we're going to have to keep a close eye at Polis on developments in the region. But I wonder actually whether the international community have potentially had, they've had a different focus when they've looked at Latin America as a whole. I mean, if you look at the EU and its sort of trade ambitions, its focus in the last couple of years has been to strike up a trade agreement with the Mercosur countries. Mm. Argentina, Brazil, Paraguay, and Uruguay. I know that's been stalling because let's just say that it's not popular in the EU in terms of Bolsonaro's activity with the Amazon sort of deforestation and its impact on climate change. But I mean, the EU has certainly focused on the Mercosur countries when it's coming when it comes to exploiting economic opportunities. And you know, I think often international investors think of Brazil as the economic powerhouse in Latin America. And I saw an interesting quote from an economist for the bank BNP Paribas, and he was referring to Brazil as a window of opportunity, given the sort of commodities boom that's happening there. I wonder whether it's the Andean countries that are actually potentially presenting opportunities rather than the traditional players.
I'd say the Chinese definitely think so. There's a big Chinese investment in Bolivia and in Peru and Chile, in the north of Chile, all to do with these commodities that we've been talking about. Not so much agriculture. I know Brazil is a big agricultural producer. This is more the raw commodities and the natural resources. I think lithium, the lithium is Bolivia's next big ploy. They really do dominate the resource on a world view. And copper has always been Chile and Peru's main thing, and they have big deals with Chinese companies. However, they are looking for European and American business. They want deals with the EU, especially Chile. Chile has always been quite close with. There's been quite a few British mining companies. The Anglo-American mining company had a big mine in the north of Chile. That was actually the scene of quite brutal, violent protests, in which actually Gabriel Boric, around the time that he was demonstrating in Santiago, there was big protests in the north in the Atacama Desert at this mine. And whether that scared off investors for a while from Britain, there's potential for that, but it's definitely an area to look at. And I think I agree, it has definitely been overlooked. And Brazil, I mean, if these countries do increase their taxation on the mining, Brazil, as it will probably grow in terms of that image.
Well, I think it's fascinating that you mentioned how China has seen an opportunity, and I'm in danger of repeating myself on an almost weekly basis on these podcasts, but it seems like the whole sort of geopolitical, US-China dynamic is at play in every corner of the globe. But thank you so much, Fergus, for joining me. It's been a really important discussion, I think, looking at a part of the world that doesn't always get much attention, but actually what you've perfectly demonstrated to our listeners as it's of huge significance to the people in those countries and to the rest of the world. But next week I'll be discussing a completely different topic. Actually, I'll be looking at the union in the United Kingdom and looking at calls for separation in Scotland and in Wales with a couple of analysts at Polis who have a focus on that part of. On that very different part of the world. But thank you so much for joining us. And thank you, Fergus, for that really interesting analysis on the Andean countries.
Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this Polis podcast episode. At Polis Analysis, we are fully devoted to helping individuals better navigate the political world. So we would love to hear your thoughts. And please do share any suggestions you may have for future Polis podcast episodes. Follow the Polis podcast channel on Spotify to access our weekly episodes. And if you want to better navigate the political world with accessible, fact-based and impartial analysis of global politics, then sign up to our free newsletter at www.polisanalysis.com. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks so much for listening.